Welcome to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, where we explore people, stories, and events in central Iowa. I'm your host for today, Ursula Rudenberg, here with engineer Mac Murphy and Anna Banana, who will be joining in a little bit later. KHOI's Introducing the Candidate series brings you local and regional candidates running in the general election to be held on November 3rd. We bring you as many candidates as respond to our invitation to come to Local Talk for an interview. And you can also find the interviews on our website at khoifm.org. The views expressed by candidates are neither endorsed or discouraged by KHOI. Our mission is to provide you with public election information. Representative Ross Wilburn is the incumbent candidate for the state representative in House District 46, which includes North Ames and the western parts of Story County. Wilburn is a social worker by training, and he also served in the Iowa Army National Guard. He currently serves as a diversity officer and associate director for community economic development at Iowa State University Extension and Outreach. In 2018, Wilburn ran for a Democratic nomination for governor, and he has also served as a city council member and mayor of Iowa City. He assumed the office of state representative in House District 46 in 2019 when Lisa Heddens vacated that seat, and he is currently running unopposed. Welcome back, Representative Wilburn. When the COVID crisis started, you were on Local Talk quite a bit to help with providing public information at the start of the crisis. It's nice to have you back. We haven't seen you for a while.
I know. I have an expression. I don't even know who you are anymore, man. This means great to see you, but I just want to thank KHOI for all of your work since the coronavirus and keeping everyone informed. Just the different perspectives that local radio is able to bring, from local government to business to human resource organizations, and how to hear from your legislators.
That's right. That's the great strength of community radio.
Absolutely.
Welcome back, and it's good to be talking again. So this time you are coming as a candidate, not as somebody who's just helping give out public information. So it's an interesting conversation to have with you right now. You are the first candidate, I think, that we've interviewed who does not have a competitor. So we have a little bit more flexibility in our conversation. I wanted to check in with something. When you ran for governor, you focused quite a bit on mental health as an issue. Share with us your thoughts, where you're at these days with that.
You bet. There are two issues that came up during the legislature. One, obviously, in terms of privatization of Medicaid and the challenge with providers being reimbursed, as well as people being able to receive services and support and knowing whether they're paid for or not, the uncertainty that can come up when a private company does a review to determine whether someone still qualifies for that support and services. And there are certain conditions that, unfortunately, in terms of mental health or some of our physical health, aren't going to go away. If you, at least in many cases, the technology is not there. If you are someone that has quadriplegia, there are technology about different wheelchair and devices, but to not know whether or not some of those are going to be covered creates a lot of anxiety and frustration for families. And then just, if you are a provider, to know that that you're getting reimbursed at a rate that helps you make a living and deliver the services. Those are questions that come up. Also, in terms of telemedicine, and it's been a great opportunity to extend both health and mental health care to Iowans, to folks here in Story County and Ames, but out in the rural areas especially, to bring some services that people hadn't been able to access before. But right away, broadband is an issue. And there are certain parts, you don't have to go very far outside of Ames to have issues with capacity and broadband. Been at a couple rural libraries and, you get three or four people on the internet doing streaming, that type of thing, and it slows down and can interfere with access. And so those types of issues, I've always looked at, what's the role, an appropriate role of government. I try not to get in the national and sometimes state debate about big government, small government. What's the appropriate size of government for effective services and ones that we agree on that is an appropriate role? I don't think we should go through the world looking at things, saying, well, that's great. This is a great thing that's happened, opportunity for whether it's business or individual, and not say, well, how can we provide those opportunities for others?
Do you feel that they are being provided in your district?
I think there are some. We do have broadband, for example, with that opportunity here in Ames. But I think we also should look at the other end. If there's problems, if someone's experiencing a problem, we shouldn't, or at least I try not to say, well, that's too bad. It's, well, what has caused that? What has led to that unfortunate incident or circumstance happening? Is there anything that can be done? And if so, what is it? Mm-hmm. And whose role is it? Is it something? Is it government? Is it government in partnership with the private market? Is it the private market, or is it something that the individual should? So I just tried to take a look at what can be done, which reminds me, just with that approach, I mean, it is the United Way funding season, and that's an opportunity right there where government, business, individuals can come together to address some of the poverty, anti-poverty issues, to address education and safety.
So what committees have you been serving on at the legislature?
I serve on the Environmental Protection Committee, the Judiciary Committee, the Human Resources Committee. That's why I've been talking about some of the healthcare issues and mental health care issues. And the Appropriations Committee is the justice system. So that funds, our correction systems, it funds some of our adult penal corrections, our state patrol, those type of things.
And what do you think really needs to be done in the next 4 years? What are your priorities as you look ahead towards your next term?
Well, my priorities have been, one, to protect our civil rights, including people with disabilities, not just people of color, but opportunities that, when certain federal or state laws came up and were addressed years ago, it's odd to be having to fight to determine that we still have civil rights. It's odd, for example, with occupational safety and health OSHA laws, that we have trouble sometimes here in Iowa. We don't have enough inspectors in OSHA for, in my opinion, and several others, to investigate claims of worker safety violations. Those are some things that have come up. You mentioned reforming mental health care, but looking at creating green jobs and expanding use of renewable energy. We've got Renewable Energy Group here in Ames. That's a great opportunity for biofuels. The city of Ames, I applaud them for the solar grid that they are putting up, and you could purchase a power pack. And I'm still, I was intending to do that and designate it to YSS, not to take advantage of the savings myself. But when I went on the webpage for some of the private, for the local nonprofits, the city had said it's a little easier logistically for them if the organization themselves, that it's not coming from multiple people doing that. So I have to figure out how to do that to benefit them. But those are the type of opportunities in terms of green jobs that come up. And then obviously with the great school system we have here, K-12, but preschool, Iowa State, community colleges, those are some of the things I've been looking at. You brought up, Ursula, the committees I've been serving on. One of the committees that I serve on is the Environmental Protection Committee. And unfortunately, we only had 3 bills come across the Environmental Protection Committee, and everyone's concerned about the environment, clean air, clean water. But the way it works is that the party in the majority determines what gets assigned to a committee and then whether it gets assigned to a subcommittee. And the Environmental Protection Committee didn't meet the first couple weeks of the legislature. And when we did, the chairperson, again, party in majority, made the announcement essentially saying that bills that were brought up the previous session and those topics are not going to be considered. Well, that took a lot of stuff off the table. And we submitted some bills anyway, but they weren't brought up, and which is unfortunate because I know that there are Republicans who would talk about clean water or soil health, but the leadership in that party determined that we weren't going to discuss things. So, I mean, the 3 bills that we brought up essentially were administrative, dot in the I, crossing the T things, and that does nothing to address the environment.
So you feel that you're kind of at a standstill with those issues until you can get the support of the Republican part of the legislature.
I think there needs to be, excuse me for interrupting, I'm sorry about that. There needs to be a change in leadership. And so I've been, even though I'm unopposed, I've been working to help get a majority back for Democrats so that we can change the balance in power if the Democrats get a majority back in the House. If we don't get a majority in the Senate, then at least the governor and the Senate need to at least have a conversation about some of the environment, healthcare, jobs. And again, I know there are Republicans who are wanting to talk about those things, but their leadership hasn't. And because a bill has to pass both chambers, the House and the Senate, it would give us a little bit more leverage to have the conversations at least.
Speaking of campaigning, I'm curious, how is campaigning happening these days? You've been very active in campaigning for the Democratic Party. And if you are running unopposed, do you actually campaign for yourself, or are you spending your time really campaigning for others at this point? And how does campaigning happen these days?
It's very challenging. It's different. And just in general, everyone, not just with elections, jobs, recreation, everyone's having to make adjustments. And so the campaigning that I've been doing for myself has been in the form of making individual calls to registered voters. But more so, I've been doing media interviews. I've been attending forums and workshops with the League of Women Voters and the American Association of University Women, NAMI, the National Alliance for Mental Illness. They had a forum a few weeks ago where we discussed mental illness and mental health. And so I've been going to Zoom, WebEx meetings that organizations have been having to talk about the issues that they're concerned about. So in that way, it's been more constituency work. I've been doing a lot of constituency work. And I'm even though I'm unopposed, I'm still asking people that I would love to have your vote. It's been an honor and a privilege representing Ames and bringing these issues to the table at the House. But I don't take that for granted because there's an expectation that I'm working and making sure the voice of citizens of Ames is heard there. Now, we don't always disagree, but I've appreciated, you know, the emails, the phone calls, the letters.
Speaking of which, I noticed when you talked about your priorities, you didn't mention the pandemic. And as you know, we've kind of gained notoriety nationally as being one of the worst hotspots in the country. How do you feel that your work as a legislator can in any way respond to that crisis? Or how do you feel you should be responding on the level of the work you do?
Yes. And the way I think about the pandemic is it's really connected with all of these issues. There's in terms of the healthcare aspect and just response to the virus itself, we need to have oversight of the executive orders that the governor has had. I'm not on the oversight committee, or as I haven't been. I don't know if there will be there will be some reassignment. I don't know if I'll get put on a government oversight, but just in general, and that's not a partisan thing. The government's been run on by executive order, and therefore the legislature has an obligation to review the executive orders in terms of the impact on business and allocation of resources with unemployment. So that's part of it. I think another part of it, and again, it relates to healthcare, and what I'm going to say is public health. You know, is our public health system in Iowa adequate, not only for coronavirus, but in preparations for whatever the next virus that may come up, or if it's a insect-borne disease, those type of things? We should have a robust and responsive public health system. So I think when I mention healthcare and schools, support for the schools, it's not just funding. It's, do the schools have the equipment, the PPE, the things that they need, the flexibility, the ability to deliver education using a combination of face-to-face broadband? So in my mind, coronavirus recovery is laced throughout all of those. Now, as a legislator, I'm not a scientist, and there's nothing I can do. We're waiting for there's nothing I can do in terms of the science behind developing the vaccine. Mm-hmm. But there are things that we can do structurally to what we can control.
Economic development is part of your wheelhouse in the work you do at Iowa State. Are you concerned about the economy of your district? That, you know, you include the university and the businesses associated with the university, who are all probably, I mean, do you foresee them taking a pretty big hit in the next year?
Well, they have taken a big hit, and just in terms of hospitals, for example, the revenue loss from hospitals, the time they had to shut down non-essential surgeries, those type of things. And there's still an adjustment. I mean, some of the larger hospitals in the state have had a backlog for emergency room, those type of issues. But again, looking at the framework, what's happening, what can be done, what should be done, there's been a shift and adjustment. A lot of people are making purchases online. Well, that has effect on local business. And so what is it that we can do to try and support smaller local business as a state and as a county and city to help with the adjustment? But even just that example, it can't just be government. What are individuals going to do? If everyone makes the shift to purchasing online, well, we've already seen that some of the warehouses and industry around online purchases in the big warehouse where their purchases are made, they're moving items from the warehouse to delivery to home. That's an adjustment of the workforce. And so what impact does that have on, some of the Ames downtown businesses? And as individuals, we need to, if we want to see those local business and not empty storefronts, then, maybe we don't do all of our shopping online. What can we do to support local business?
Is there anything you see that the legislature can do to help?
Well, I think there's always the opportunity of looking at, some type of tax incentive, tax break, but not just saving those for larger corporations. What opportunities can there be for smaller? Because there's more smaller business in the state than there are some of the larger big box organizations, those type of things. But again, even just coming back to our public health response to the virus and preparation moving forward. If workers are sick, whether they're in large business or smaller business, then that has a disruptive effect on the economy.
Mm-hmm.
So everything is shifting related to our response to the virus, and it has to be examined from a wide variety of viewpoints.
Well, we're speaking with Representative Ross Wilburn for the 46th District, who's up for election. He's the incumbent, and he is unopposed. So thank you for stopping by and speaking with us, Ross. It's always nice to have you here and hear your commentary. Any last words?
Again, I ask for your vote, but vote. We have secure things in place. Our county auditor has taken steps to make sure that we have access to early voting, absentee voting, and there are the satellite locations are going on. You can drop it off at the county administration building, or you can vote on election day. And when you do so, do so safely. Make sure that you're wearing face coverings to protect our neighbors. And there may be a line where you're at, but I'm encouraged because you may have seen video from Texas and Georgia, people having waited 10, 11 hours in line to vote, but doing so enthusiastically. Our right to vote is fundamental to our democracy. And so please get out and vote. It does make a difference.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you, Ross.
Thank you. Good to be with you.
noche buena te compraré un traje charme. Para la noche buena te compraré un traje charme. Para las Pascuas, otro de Yorke. Para las Pascuas, otro de Yorke. Charme, charme, charme. Yorke, Yorke, Yorke. Crepe, 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 no camina. Charme, charme, charme. Yorke, Yorke, Yorke. Juanita Petito no camina. Charme, charme, charme. Yorke, Yorke, Yorke. Juanita Petito no camina.
Juanita Petito no camina.
Juanita Petito no camina.
Ella mira por aquí, camina por allá.
Juanita Petito no camina.
Esa mi Juanita Petito, mi Juanita Petito.
Juanita Petito no camina.
Yo no camino mal, yo me siento.
Juanita Petito no camina.
Yo no camino mal, yo me siento.
And this is Local Talk. I'm your host for this hour, Ursula Rudenberg. And that was Changui Madero, a musical group that combines the spirit of Cuban folkloric music with a East Los Angeles sound. And these musicians were recently celebrated during the National Hispanic Heritage Month, which traditionally honors the cultures and traditions of U.S. residents who trace their roots to Spain, Mexico, and the Spanish-speaking nations of Central America, South America, and the Caribbean. September 15th was chosen as the starting point for National Hispanic Heritage Month because it is the anniversary of independence of five Latin American countries, Costa Rica, El Salvador, Guatemala, Honduras, and Nicaragua. In addition, Mexico and Chile celebrate their independence days on September 16th and September 18th, respectively. So a few facts I looked up real quickly. According to the State Data Center of Iowa, the estimated Latino population of Iowa as of July 1st, 2019, was 198,550 people, making Hispanic or Latino people of origin the state's largest race or ethnic minority. Latinos constitute 6.3% of the state's total population. That number is expected to grow. It's been projected that the population, Latino population in 2015 will be more than 400,000, although predictions like that, who knows what that really means. In 2019, the Story County Hispanic population made up 3.7% of the population, in Boone County, 2.7%, and in Polk County, 8.7%. Hardin County had 44.55%. and Hamilton County, 6.2%. That compares to Marshall County, which had 23% Hispanic population, and Tama County, which had 10.8%. So obviously, we're pretty late in coming to the celebration. In fact, we're here on the last day, but fortunately, Clever Miranda, president of the Latinx Student Initiatives at Iowa State, is here with us here on Local Talk. And thank you for joining us, Clever. We really appreciate you coming.
Thank you for having me.
So I want to talk about Hispanic heritage, but before we do that, I just want to ask you a little bit about the Latinx Student Initiatives. Your website say you have the goals of developing and experiencing the Latina culture or community. Mm-hmm. Here in our community, in Ames, I suppose, or Story County, mm-hmm. and to develop student leadership in the Latino community, and also just to empower them. The last point about empowerment, is there a sense at with Iowa State students that it's still that they still very much feel like a minority or somewhat excluded because of their Latino heritage?
I believe so, yes. As seen as Iowa State, a predominantly white school, you don't really see that a lot of Latinos out there at the university, being a university that carries thousands of students. As myself walking around, I barely see Latinos there, any Latinx individuals. So I myself feel like there's a very small population of Latinx students at Iowa State. So what we try to do as an organization is try to get that small population together to give that support to each other, basically.
Now, I've known some people that were part of the Latinx Leadership Organization, and it's a very, from what I've heard, it's a very high-spirited and warm-hearted group mm-hmm. of people. Just tell us a little bit about it for those who aren't familiar with it.
So Latinx Student Initiatives is basically an organization that tries to join most of the Latinx students together to support, to learn about each other's cultures and selves. Most students who are at Iowa State are first-generation students in which they are afraid or they don't have that support system to go to college. As myself, I'm a victim of a person who was so close to dropping my first year at Iowa State, and I encountered Latinx Student Initiatives, which was basically like a family to me. That's why I became president, because I want to give back to what they gave me, give back to the new students who are coming in. And basically, it's just that support system and giving that opportunity for other students to get out of their shell and feel comfortable at Iowa State and just feel that there's someone there to help you if you are just not feeling okay at Iowa State. So
it really does make a difference.
It does make a difference. Mm-hmm. And there's several people who I've talked to in regards to who they are and who they believe. There's a specific student who is part of the LGBTQ community and is Latino, which is very hard. I've been there, especially myself as studying as a psychologist. I've been there to help them throughout the year or two at Iowa State to basically keep forward and just to know that it's for him and it's not for no one else. So his degree is for him. So.
Mm-hmm. So that's really a connection like that can really be the difference whether somebody stays or not. And so it's fantastic that it does happen because these are folks that clearly have a lot to offer mm-hmm. and coming from really rich and vibrant cultures themselves and can really bring that to the community. Mm-hmm. Do students at Iowa State actually celebrate National Hispanic Heritage Month?
It's not really like a celebration that we do. It's just, how can I put it in place? It's just for myself and personally, and I know others as well. It's just the knowing and that feeling that there's other people out there that appreciate our culture mm-hmm. and that appreciate that we're here mm-hmm. And then embrace that with others. So tell us
about your culture. You said you're a first generation American, right?
I am first generation. My parents migrated from Ecuador in the 90s, early 90s. And
how old were you when you came here?
I was actually born here.
You were born here. Okay.
I was born here in 1998. So
I guess I'm dating myself. I think you would have come in the 90s. That's right.
I was born here. I have an older brother and older sister. Both were born in Ecuador, and they came from Ecuador as well. But they came like 3 years after my parents were here. So
what do your parents tell you about your heritage as an Ecuadorian?
As an Ecuadorian? As an Ecuadorian, they just appreciate being Ecuadorian itself.
It's a very, very beautiful country.
It is a very beautiful country, and I miss it so much. I've gone many times to Ecuador, but in reality, what I've learned about Ecuador is like just actually going there and learning myself, learning about this culture, learning about different types of people, how they live. And we've got family who are very high end, like money wise. And then I have other people in my family that are very, very poor. So we try to help out whoever we can. We sometimes go to Goodwill or Salvation Army, so places like that. And we'll go and buy some stuff, some clothing, and then we'll pack up bags and take them to Ecuador so we can give out to the family.
So what can you share like about Ecuador with our listener that they may not know about the country? What's something you can really convey about the spirit or the feeling of the country?
Okay, well, Ecuador is very welcoming. Ecuador is a country that, being honest, you will not feel out of place. This is like your home. Everyone will welcome you with their biggest arms and biggest hands, hugging you. So, yeah, there are some problems. Like any other country has their problems with politics and everything. The people the people are just very humble and very welcoming. Also,
I hear the weather is really nice.
It depends on where you're at, though. I have a family member, like I said, my dad is from the mountainside and my mom's from the coast. So where my mom is at, the weather is amazing. You get out and one side you see the mountains. My mom lives right in between the mountains and the coast. So one side you see the mountains and the other side you see the coast. So in the morning it's very, very hot. And then in the evening, it gets this like 70 degrees, breezy, very nice. But like I said, it all depends on where you're at. If you're more in the mountainside, you'll see more of like a European style buildings and churches and all gold and everything very nice. And then you go to the coast side, you'll see more of like modern, what you'll see around different like modern cities. Very, very nice.
Clever, where were you born?
So I was born in Des Moines.
In Des Moines. So yeah, how has that been for you to travel back and forth between Ecuador and Des Moines? Those two very different worlds.
Two different worlds, two different cultures. So what I can say is, well, I did it for a reason. Like my parents and I were separated when I was young. So I had to go back to Ecuador to visit them during vacation time. So then I would study here for school. It was very, very different because here, but language has to do a lot. And whenever I would go to Ecuador, I would try most of the languages, Spanish. So I would sometimes talk English to my parents because they would know, but it was mostly Spanish. And I was known as the white boy that would go to Ecuador. So all of the kids from our little village would come to me and they'd be like, speak English, I need you to speak English. And I would say hello and they'd be like, oh my God, and they'll start screaming. And it was like the event of the year for me going. But coming back here from Ecuador, it was a completely different because I was learning so much Spanish throughout, you know, either it's a month or two, and then I'll come here and then my English was really bad. So that's why I was put into ESL because of my English and my Spanish. As of now, I'm fluent, I would say, for both languages. And that's helped me a lot. So, but from there, everything's been fine. Mm-hmm. From coming back and forth to Ecuador and here.
Well, at the risk of asking you to generalize more than you can you speak just a little bit about I quoted some statistics at the beginning of our conversation about the growing population.
Ursula got frozen. I don't know if she can hear you, but what are your favorite foods from Ecuador?
My brother actually owns a restaurant here in West Des Moines, the first and only Ecuadorian restaurant in Iowa. So I always have food there.
Clever, can you hear me again?
Yes, I can
okay.
hear you now.
Okay, I guess I'm back. We need to wrap up in just a second, but I wanted to ask you if you can answer this question. At the beginning of our conversation, I talked a little bit about the statistics of the growing number of people of Hispanic heritage in Iowa. What do you think that the Hispanic culture is bringing to Iowa? This is something that's been growing for the last 20 years or so. How do you think the state is enriched by the presence of a Hispanic community?
Well, I can see it in a lot of businesses. I can see that a lot more businesses are coming in and a lot of more people are appreciating it. As like I was telling Anna, my brother owns an Ecuadorian restaurant here. And so that's something that we bring. We have another family member who owns an Ecuadorian store, which brings in Ecuadorian goodies and stuff. So people come in and they appreciate it. And I'm is talking about people from all around, even from the States, they'll come in just to try our food. And so, and it's the same for any other people who come in. They're coming in and they're basically showing their culture to others as us, not just as to anyone but Hispanics, but Hispanics themselves. Like as an Ecuadorian, I'm learning a different culture from a different country, Hispanic country, that I have not known. And I can say one as Honduras. I have a friend who's teaching me a lot more of her culture, and she's teaching others as well. And I'm here again, a little showing about Ecuador. So for those who are listening, just that for myself is like just an appreciation that you're getting to know a little bit about Ecuador. So and those others as well coming in, teaching as well about their cultures. So.
Well, thank you, Clever. Thank you. We're speaking with Clever Miranda. He's president of the Latinx Student Initiatives at Iowa State and the new generation of Hispanic Iowans, right? Bringing a new level of culture. Thank you so much for joining us and
have a good day. Yeah, you too. Bye-bye.
This is Local Talk here on KHOI Community Radio. I'm your host for the hour, Ursula Rudenberg, and that's the a very popular Mexican singer, Natalia Lafourcade, and I hope I'm pronouncing her name right. And Susan Guiazda, Public Relations Officer of the City of Ames, is back, and with her is Resource Recovery Systems Superintendent Bill Smith. Thank you for coming back.
Good morning, Ursula. It's good to see you again.
Yeah, it's been a while. Hi, Bill. Thank you for stopping by. Now, you have some announcements, I understand, Bill. Is that correct?
Yes, it is. As you may have noticed, the leaves are starting to turn on the trees. We're getting those beautiful fall colors. With all the wind that we had yesterday and the more wind we're having today, there's going to be a lot of leaves coming down. And the city has the fall yard waste days coming up. Saturday, October 31st, will be the first fall yard waste day. It'll be for leaves only. That will run from 8 a.m. to 4 p.m. Then the next weekend, November 7th, will be for leaves and brush. So if you have any brush, you can bring along with your leaves and your garden trimmings. That'll run the same hours. We do this year also have a voucher day, which means that you can come to Resource Recovery or you can go to the yard waste site, 400 Creel Drive, and you can pick up a paper voucher. And what you can do with that is the day before on November 6th, you can go to the yard waste site and get rid of your brush at that time. So it gives people a little option if they have something on the 7th where they can't go, or if they want to go where there's usually a little less people, they can go on that Friday and get rid of the brush then.
And
the last 2 days will be...
What are the hours again? What are the hours again?
8 a.m. to 4 p.m. on Saturdays. And then the last two leaf days will be November 21st and November 28th, the Saturday after Thanksgiving. So we try to pick the best days that we can. You just never know with the weather and when the leaves are going to fall. Oak leaves are always a little late coming down, so we try to get as late as we can. We've actually had fall leaf days snowed out before because of bad weather. So we usually try to wrap up around the last part of the November, first part of December. So it's really a well-used program. We really encourage people to get leaves out. We don't want them getting into storm sewer because that can create drainage problems, plug the storm sewers, which then when spring comes around, we can have flooding on streets and create property damage. So really encourage people to get those cleaned up and get them out. The site, as I said, is at 400 Friel Drive. We encourage people to come in off of South Dayton Avenue on Southeast 5th Street. You go west and then you go north on Friel Drive. You'll just follow the signs and the directions. They'll take you right into the waste site. You drop your material off there. Please use either paper bags or compostable bags for your leaves. If you just want to put them on a tarp in your trailer and or back of pickup, you can do that. Put a tarp over them, and then when you get there, you can just drop them right off on the ground. And then you'll just exit north on Creel Drive onto Lake Roy. It's really smooth service, works out really well. Please pay attention on city social media the week before each event. This is a site that's on dirt, so if we get a lot of rain or snow, that can impede the amount of the site that can be open. Right now, everything is extremely dry. The entire site's open, but we don't know what the weather will be like in another 2 weeks.
And it goes without saying that burning leaves is not allowed in the city, right?
That is correct, yes. Yep. Only recreational fires are allowed, and that leaf burning is not a recreational fire. So,
what is a recreational fire?
If someone has a fire pit in their backyard, they can use that. But you can't do brush cleaning and clearing and burn that. You'll probably get a visit from some very nice people from the Ames Fire Department to educate you a little bit about that. One other program we've got that we're really happy that's been going extremely well is the Great Pumpkin Disposal Program. On the north side of Resource Recovery, which is located at 110 Center Avenue, we put several totes out there, and people can put their pumpkins or gourds or squash when they get done with their fall decorations. We take those in, and we work with our yard waste supplier, vendor, the one down at Creel Drive. They take those, they haul them down to their compost site in Eddyville, Iowa. They grind them up with the yard waste, and then they make compost out of them. As you can imagine, after a pumpkin's been sitting out for weeks on a front porch, by the time it gets to us, it's just kind of slop. You know, it's not good for pumpkin pie or anything else anymore.
Makes good compost.
It makes great compost. It really does.
Where again should one bring one's pumpkins or gourds? Where is that?
At the Resource Recovery Plant at the north side. We're located at 110 Center Avenue. There'll be several large totes out there. They're about 4 foot by 4 foot and about 5 foot high. And just put the pumpkins in there. The pumpkins can be painted. It doesn't matter. If you've got some corn stalks with them, you can do that too. We just ask that you don't put any wire there if you have artificial leaves or flowers with them, pull those out, just throw those in your garbage. Mm-hmm. And the nice thing about it is, as you say, Ursula, we can put that and make compost out of it. If not, it comes here, it gets mixed in with dry garbage, and it makes that wet wet, which isn't useful for the power plant. That goes over to the landfill, and then it creates methane.
Right.
We definitely want to reduce that as much as we can.
Right, right. Okay, so these are fall activities, right?
Yes, they are. And they're really well received, and people really seem to enjoy them. So we're glad to offer these services.
Well, thank you. And thank you for delivering such good services. It's great keeping fall running smoothly.
We enjoy doing it.
Susan, do you have any other announcements before we go?
Sure. One other fall activity that we do every year is that we kick off the budget season with the town budget meeting. Just a reminder that that is scheduled for 7 p.m. on Thursday, November 5th. That is actually sort of the opening to the city budgeting. It's an opportunity for the public to weigh in, to get a very short overview of the budget process, and then to comment on maybe what their preferences are in city spending for the following year. So that is will be a Zoom teleconference again, so you can get information on how to participate on our website.
And that's it. cityofames.org.
Cityofames.org, absolutely. Mm-hmm.
And budgets are not really dry. Budgets are about planning, right? It's really...
Yeah, budgets about priorities and allocation mm-hmm. of funding, and everybody has a stake in this.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, thank you so much. Susan, do you have any pumpkins in front of your house?
My pumpkins are being eaten by squirrels.
Oh.
So I'm going to have to bring them to Bill early.
So you put some pumpkins in front of your house and the squirrels came and ate them?
Mm-hmm. They'll take big chunks out of them. Yep. So they're getting eaten, I guess. They look very scary.
Did they have carved faces already, or is this kind of...
No, solid pumpkins. I guess it's just squirrel food.
I have never heard of that before, of squirrels going after pumpkins. That's very interesting.
Well, I sprayed them with a diluted bleach mixture, and that didn't help.
It didn't, huh?
No. Well. So if anybody has ideas, I would be happy to hear them, because I'm going to have to buy new pumpkins.
Okay. Well, thank you for those announcements, Bill, and thank you, Susan, for coming and keeping us updated. And I guess it is time for Anna Banana to move in, and happy fall, you guys. Anna, are you there?
Yeah, thank you, Ursula. So, you know, Thursdays can seem like the 2 p.m. slump of the week, but let's call this Thumbs Up Thursday by recognizing the positive things about getting to pre-Friday. So I would say a thumbs up for this week's gorgeous fall weather and the leaves changing colors, and for all things associated with autumn, apple cider, apple pies, and pumpkin pie. But a thumbs up to the city of Ames, of course, to make sure that you don't just keep your pumpkins and leaves on the ground and take them to the disposable center or to the resource recovery plant. I want to give a thumbs up to Dr. Joan Sue and her students at the Iowa State University's Event 379 class. They had to figure out quickly how to host events without meeting in person for their class projects. So far, they have hosted a recipe for success class making scotcheroos over WebEx, and there was a trivia event by Zoom. So Dr. Sue deserves a big thumbs up for being such an amazing educator who is being dedicated to her students in spite of all the constrictions of the COVID-19 pandemic. I want to give a congratulatory thumbs up for Sean Blessing's family welcoming a new puppy named Newt into their home. He is so cute. So welcome, Newt, and thumbs up to the Sean Blessing family. And then I'd like to introduce a new Thursday segment I'm going to call You Got This with Corey Geoffrey. So Corey shares this heart-to-heart message with you. Okay, so you're not perfect. So what? Our journey on this earth is not about achieving perfection. Our journey is about becoming the best version of ourselves. Many of us are not as good as we could be or want to be. If this is you, then I have some simple advice for becoming the best you. I am not talking about big life-altering improvements. I'm talking about the small incremental changes that happen over months or years. So how do you accomplish better? This is what I want to share with you in the next few moments. One of my favorite leaders says, better is a direction. Can we just get a little bit better? I love when he says that it just reminds me that we don't have to swing for the fence in everything in our lives. To stick with the baseball analogy, rather than trying for a home run, can we just get on base? For many of us, that may be hard as we're too afraid to even step into the batter's box, or we do not have a very good swing, or we're too out of shape to run to the base. The current pandemic has many of us spending too much time in our own heads talking about the things we cannot do. My challenge is to accept things you cannot do, but then start making improvements. I will table the baseball analogy for now and move into things more practical. Here are three ways for you to start with to make yourself a little bit better. One, read a book. Reading books helps open up your mind and imagination. It helps you think differently. I recommend reading a nonfiction book to help you get better, but reading a fiction book can be relaxing if that's what you need. Number two, spend some time in meditation prayer. This is hard to do when you have a busy house. The best time I have found is 5 minutes in the parking lot in my car, either before or after work. It helps me get my mind right before going into work or heading home. Some days I do both before and after work. Three, go for regular walks outside. Two cues are here, regular and outside. Find a cadence to your walking schedule. Maybe it is 3 or 4 times per week. Mine is right at sunset 3 times per week with my wife. The walk needs to be outside even when it is cold. There are some things that cannot be replaced by technology, and outside walk is one of them. That's it for now, so take care of yourself and take it easy on yourself. Perfection is not the goal. Improvement is the goal. So thank you, Corey. So Corey is my Leadership AIMS class participant, and he's the Vice President and Chief Nursing Officer at the Mary Greeley Medical Center, and he studied management and is an author. And again, has agreed to submit regular heart-to-heart messages to inspire, inform, encourage us to be our best selves. So back to you, Ursula.
Thank you, and we thank Corey. That's wonderful. A new addition to the heart-to-heart message bank.
Team, yes, it's great.
It's really nice. It's really nice to have Corey with us. So thank you, Corey, and sharing for words of wisdom. Good advice. This has been Local Talk. Before we close the show, I want to talk about the auction again. The auction is going to close in 3 days, and I can't believe that nobody has bid yet on Tom Russell's offer to tune a piano. So this is something that this is a great offer. And I know from experience, because my father has a piano, that if you usually want to get Tom Russell's service, you have to get on a waiting list. So this is a fantastic offer. It's going right to the top of the line, and it's also a really good price that you get to set. And so if you have a piano, check out the auction house at khoifm.org. You might be glad you did. And if you don't have a piano, this is what you can do. You can think of somebody you do know that has a piano, and you can ask them to go to the auction house and make a bid. And you'll be doing two good things in one action. You'll really be helping out a friend with their piano tuning needs, and you'll also be helping to support KHOI, because all the proceeds from the auction house go to support operations at KHOI. So again, and while you're there, there are so many other beautiful items too that you can check out. So that's at khoifm.org, and go to the button that says auction house, and it'll take you right there. And you have been listening to Local Talk here on KHOI. I've been your host, Ursula Rudenberg, here with Anna Banana and engineer Mike Murphy. Local Talk airs at 7 a.m. and 7 p.m. And remember that you can also hear a recording of the show later online at khoifm.org. Stay tuned for Democracy Now! At 8 a.m. and Morning Masterpieces at 9 a.m. And remember that you, the listener, are what makes KHOI meaningful and possible. You really do. Anna, would you finish the show?
Yeah, so our theme song, as always, is Backtracking by Tom Richards and Al Harris from their CD, The Ballad of Kate Shelley. Stay tuned for Headline News and Democracy Now! At 8 a.m. and Morning Masterpieces at 9 a.m. Remember, you, the listener, are what makes KHOI meaningful and possible. So thank you for listening. Thank you for supporting KHOI, and we'll see you again on the radio.
See you again on the radio.
you convicted of a felony? Would you like to vote in Iowa? Now you probably can. On August 5th, the law in Iowa changed. That means most Iowans convicted of a felony can now vote. As long as you've discharged your sentence, including probation, parole, supervised release, and special sentence. Find out more at youcanvoteiowa.org. That's youcanvoteiowa.org.